Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We will be here for the next hour talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery main Facebook page. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have classes.
We do have classes.
Yes. Not mistaken, George?
You are correct. Yes, sir. Today, the 19th.
The 19th in San Diego. John, you're going to be teaching the class today in San Diego.
I am, on aquatic plants.
At 9 o'clock.
Yes. Water lilies, lotus, how to do marginal plantings, how to really landscape in water.
That should be a very interesting class. I would get there early. So not only you can get a parking space, but you can get a seat. John's classes are always very popular. Yeah, quick thing about landscaping for landscaping with water plants. Going back in history, as we tend to do. one of our longtime customers back in the day was Frankie Lane, the singer.
Yes, he lived in Point Loma.
He lived in Point Loma, and he had a huge lily pond in his front yard. And we divided and replanted all of his water lilies one time. And I, along with our delivery driver at the time, who happened to be a very good friend of mine, got the pleasure of going out to his house and meeting him and his lovely wife, just a very, very nice guy. And then we got to wade into waist deep water and plant the, or shouldn't say plant, but place the lilies into Frankie's lily pond.
So isn't that fun?
One of my big claims to fame is mucking around in Frankie Lane's lily pond, putting the plants in, and we were completely soaked because we carried them into the pond in waist deep water. But then when you have to set them down, you have to lean over into the pond. So we were pretty much soaked through by the time we...
Were you wearing waders?
No, I was I was probably wearing OP shorts and some tennis shoes at the time.
So. And that's the proper term for it, by the way, is mucking out the ponds. Yes. I did this in England and they refer to it as mucking out the ponds. Yeah. You know, and they really do this. And I've done a lot of care of big lily ponds and... the worst is Fairbanks Ranch because rattlesnakes like to swim.
Oh.
And I've had 5-6 foot long rattlesnakes swim across at me and that'll wet your waders from the inside.
Well, it's funny. That was one of the jobs that everybody hated at the San Diego store way back when was mucking out the ponds. And we used, they were about, I think they were 8 or 10 foot diameter galvanized steel stock tanks. And you would have to siphon the water out to the point where you could lift the one side of the tank slightly higher than the other so that the water would drain out the welded in drain plug. But then, especially after a long period of time, the amount of muck that was at the bottom of the ponds would clog the drain from draining. So somebody had to sit there and reach down and pull whatever was blocking the drain plug. And I remember I was doing it one time with another one of our employees and we were taking turns reaching in and then clogged up and he reached in and he was, man, there's something big that's clogging it this time. And he grabbed it and he pulled it out and it was a dead goldfish that was about the size of his hand. And when he saw it, it shocked him so badly, he screamed and threw the goldfish across the nursery. So I don't know whatever happened to it, but that may have been the last time I actually did that job. That was not a pleasant
job. No, it's not a fun job. So,
in the Poway store today at 9:30, getting back on track, we have a class today and it's going to be tropical plants, selection and care. And that's going to be with Mike Letzring, who is one of the horticulturalists at the San Diego Zoo, a very good friend of the nursery. He's in here a lot. Very, very interesting guy. Does a lot of, he's working on a very interesting project over in Hawaii. And I think he discussed that when he was on, we've had him on the show.
Correct. Yeah. He's in Hawaii a lot.
Yeah. He's over there a lot. And he's working with Precarious, the native Precarious palms over in the islands. Working, and they were trying to collect a seed bank that they were going to keep here in San Diego because they're having some issues with them.
They are
with them over there. Yeah. But Mike Teets he's a very interesting guy, a very knowledgeable guy, and he will be here at 9:30 today to teach the class on tropical.
And he's expanding. In the past, he's taught tropical fruit trees for us, and now he's expanding to do plants as well. I mean, other ornamental plants, so begonias, alocasia, philodendrons, gingers. Palms, cycads, et cetera.
It's many of my favorites.
And bananas.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. I'm a huge fan of them.
Well, here's a chance to learn more. Come and see Mike.
Yeah. I probably should. Or I'll just talk to him on some other time when he's in here. So anyway, moving on with the show today, we have a special guest in studio today. We have Karen England from the San Diego Horticultural Society has come in to join us. Karen, thank you very much for coming in. We appreciate it.
And not only from the society, the president of the society. Yeah. I want to play Hail to the Chief here.
Yeah, that was an accident. Nobody knows how that happened.
Oh, that's funny. And back when the California Association of Nurserymen had a strong presence here in San Diego, my dad was involved with that, as he was with the Horticultural Society for a long, long time. And when it came time to elect the board, a lot of times they would forget to do it. And so they would just nominate people that weren't at the meeting. And then the next time they showed up, they had
a board position. I think that's how I got
this. That was the week you were gone. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, Karen, thank you very much for coming in and joining us today.
I'm so happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about the Horticultural Society, how long it's been around. And
it's been around over 30 years.
That sounds about right.
And it met for the beginning years in Encinitas at the San Diego Botanic Garden in the Ecke building. And there are still charter members from that very first meeting that are members to this day.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. It's wonderful to have that kind of heritage in there. I grew up working across the street at Sunshine Gardens. That's my family's business. It was my family's business. It's closed now. But I was there on and off, mostly off, just to be clear. So if anybody ever listens to this, they'll say, she didn't work for 50 years straight, but I was there all 50 years. But so I was the representative from Sunshine Gardens to the San Diego Hort for the face of it. So I was around at the charter membership time, but I wasn't a charter member.
I know my dad, I can't remember if my dad was a charter member, but I know he was involved with it for a very, very long time. Yes,
very early on, and if not charter.
If not a charter member.
Exactly.
And I vaguely remember it meeting at the time it would have been Quail Botanical Gardens, now the San Diego Botanical Gardens. But I do remember him going when they would meet at the San Diego at the race place.
Yeah, Satellite Wagering.
Yeah, at the Satellite Wagering Center at Del Mar for many years.
That was kind of the pinnacle of the membership. It was huge at the time.
Well, you had over 1,500 members, I think, wasn't it?
At one point, yes. We're at around 500 now, so that's pretty good having survived COVID, I think.
I would say so.
And an aging membership.
Well, an aging membership. And one of the things that we've talked about on this show on a number of occasions is just the decline of the horticulture industry in San Diego County over the years.
I could walk to so many nurseries when I was a kid on Encinitas Boulevard. I could go up to Stallings. I could go across over to Widener's and
Stubbs, Fuchsia.
Ecke's Quail Gardens Drive, which is still called Quail Gardens Drive. They haven't changed that yet. Didn't go through when I was a kid. It just dead ended before Leucadia Boulevard, and now goes through there on Ecke's properties.
That's right,
right, right.
Mm-hmm. And they would rent out unused land by them to flower growers, to other nurseries. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have a driver's license, but they would send me in a delivery truck up there. We would rent some property from them to get like overflow plants and stuff like that. And I'm driving, you know, probably going to kill everybody because I'm only like 13 or 14 years old.
Oh my God. The agricultural world.
Yeah. They taught me to drive so that I could move employee cars on a busy day so that the employees that were valuable, I wasn't that, could still work with the customers. They wouldn't be made to move their cars to a dirt lot someplace offsite. So that's why I learned to drive.
Anyway. Oh, very interesting.
And, wow. And Sunshine Gardens, you said, was your family's garden?
My cousins. I'm not an inheriting part of the family. My aunt and uncle and their three kids had Camar Growers, which was a color grower in Encinitas. And Sunshine Gardens started a few years later as a retail arm of that wholesale business.
That's right. It was it was a Campbell and Martin family.
Yes.
Correct. So if I'm not correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that is my... my cousin Ron Martin had Sunshine Gardens.
Okay.
And my cousin Dick Campbell had, and his family had Camar Growers. The retail and the were run by different brothers.
We used to buy tons of plant material from Camar Growers in the day. Back when probably the majority of our bedding plants were grown in San Diego County. Mm. A lot of the other S&M growers was here.
Yes.
South Bay. There were a lot of Southland growers, unfortunately, just disappeared a couple of years ago. But there were a lot. And actually, Southland developed from Ferrari greenhouses, which the Ferrari family was a dairy farm.
In Mission Valley.
Right. As a matter of fact, the Ferrari farmhouse is still there between Camino de la Reina and Interstate 8. Mm-hmm. You have to look for it, but it's there.
Is it a historic monument?
I don't know if it's historic or not. And I actually don't know if the Ferrari family still owns it or not. But yeah, Southland Growers evolved from Ferrari Growers. The gentleman that used to own Southland Growers, Tom Laff, he bought the business from the Ferrari family. He was their sales rep for a number of years.
We have a world now that's so different than what we remember. Mm-hmm. And I feel like our job now is to somehow keep that going for the people that
trying to hold on to it. You know, talking about stub. Oh, you know what? Actually, we need to take a quick break. We could talk about this when we get back. We're talking to Karen England from the San Diego Hort Society here on Garden Talk. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements and George Allman, and our special guest, Karen England from the San Diego Horticultural Society. Karen, thank you very much again for coming in. We had our quick little rundown memory lane from a lot of the nurseries that used to be in the area. And you know, another one that you never hear of anymore, at least I never hear of anymore, was Leucadia Nursery, which was the Voorhees family, if I'm not mistaken.
I think I went to school with the Voorhees, but I'm sure about that. But yeah.
Yeah, and they were a little bit farther north on the frontage road on the right hand. They were just a little bit farther north of
Widener's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're kind of halfway in between. Mm-hmm. I remember going up there a few times. I think Mr. Voorhees was very involved with the California Association of Nurserymen back at the time. I know my dad knew him. So anyway, getting away from the San Diego history part of it, tell us a little bit more about the Horticultural Society and the mission of the Horticultural Society here in San Diego.
We really want to promote appropriate area gardening among our members and our community. And so that's kind of it in a nutshell, not wanting to we want firescaping, we want xeriscaping, we want all the things that are appropriate for our area to be uppermost in what we talk about. But we talk about anything that grows. And we sometimes talk about the things that died. But anyway, but it encompasses all of San Diego County. So we're a little different than a garden club. I've belonged to the Vista Garden Club because I live in Vista. But, that's specific to my area, where San Diego Hort is specific to our entire county. Mm-hmm. And so we have so many different climates all around our county. With people up in Julian have a different climate, Mediterranean still, but it's different than we have down here at the coast. And mm-hmm. north and south have different climates and everything. So it's having information and presentations, speakers, and all about the plants that grow in our area, native or not, that and how to grow them effectively.
Are a majority of the members commercial growers or just backyard gardeners?
No, I would say it was half and half back in the heyday, but now it's the commercial growers have gone, and that wing of our membership has gone as well, pretty much. And it's now more hobbyists, some growers, home gardeners. A lot of landscape designers are in our group, and then and landscapers and that sort of thing, more the maintenance and installation and design than growers.
Yeah, one of the hobbyists that I know that was a member for a long, long time, I don't know if he still is or not. I haven't seen him in years. It was Bruce Hubbard.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. He's still there.
He's still there.
Oh, he had an unbelievable collection of
stuff.
Shout
out to Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce has cool plants.
He's got some neat, neat stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had only been to his house one time, and he used to live over in Del Dio. I don't know if he still does or not.
I don't think he does now.
Yeah, but I did go to his house one time and got to see his collection. It was impressive to
Orchid
say the
guy
least.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got amazing plants.
It was amazing. So you get people from, I guess you could say, almost a fanatic collector just a backyard hobbyist.
No, it's really true. We have some people that are members that are speakers and presenters on a certain topic, mm-hmm. but they're members because they're wanting to learn the things that aren't in their lane.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
And you yourself, we were talking about this before we went on the air. You specialize in herbs.
Yes.
But you're not an herbalist.
No, I'm not.
You corrected me very quickly when I mentioned that. Why don't you tell us what it is that you actually do?
I will. Because
that's an interesting story.
So first of all, to define an herbalist is somebody that has studied the human condition and knows anatomy and physiology and all those kinds of things, as well as botany and horticulture and all, and can treat ailments with the correct plant and all. So there's training involved. There's Eastern herbalism and Western herbalism, and I'm not that.
Okay.
So Miracle Max a Western?
I don't know.
Call in Miracle Max and tell us. But
the Princess Bride.
Oh, yeah. Princess Bride. Yeah.
Okay, don't call in. But I call myself an herbologist to be able to have some people be able to call me something.
Okay.
And I'm just a fanatic. Mm-hmm. I love herbs. I use herbs. I'm on the board of the International Herb Association, and we are the group that picks the herb of the year each year. And have done for the last 30 years. This year, it's chamomile.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's interesting.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
Very good one.
And many years ago, it was rose. Even further back in history, it was scented geraniums. And as a member of the board of the International Herb Association. It turned out, I didn't know this at the time when I took the board position, that I got a seat at the table at the horticultural committee that picks the herb of the year in 5-year blocks. And we just did that. And I have breaking news for you.
This just in.
This just in. Turmeric is the 2026 herb of the year. Flax is 2027. Tulsi and other osmums is 2028. Nasturtium is 2029. And alliums et al. 2030.
Wow.
Wow.
I know.
Very interesting.
Is done for the next 5 years.
Yeah. Where is it's the International
Herb Association. Or
where is that based?
All over. We're not like the Herb Society of America. I'm also a member of that, but I'm not on any committees or boards with that.
Okay.
But they have a home base in somewhere.
Okay.
And the International Herb Association is the treasurer's based out of Florida. So we have a post office box and a bank account in there, but we're all over mostly the United States, even though we're international, and Canada. But we have Australia and Ireland and England.
So mostly at large then?
Yeah, all at large, exactly.
I have a question. How is an herb selected to be
so
the
glad you
one
asked.
Of the year?
It's like I prompted you, and I didn't.
No, you did not.
So what is an herb? An herb is a useful plant, useful for cooking, crafting, or medicine. So that's the definition that we go by. The Herb Society of America says that an herb is a plant of use or delight. So they make it a little easier. But for us, it's cooking, crafting, or medicine. And an herb to be nominated has to be useful in at least two of the three categories. So foxglove, digitalis, Herbaria will never be herb of the year, even though it's a herb, because it's not culinary and it's not crafting. It's definitely medicinal.
It is medicinal.
Definitely medicinal.
Yeah. So
interesting.
That's how.
But it is an herb of delight or a plant of delight.
It is.
What if fox?
I like your definition better, because that I think is the traditional understanding of what an herb is.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But maybe digitalis needs a better lobbying group.
Well, I would think heart doctors would be their group of lobbyists. So, but anyway, it's a very important herb, but it'll never be herb of the year because it's not two of the three categories. And then there are so many herbs that are trifectas that are useful in all of the categories. I'm looking at this upcoming list and I look at flax.
That surprises me. I wouldn't have thought of flax as an herb myself, but
okay. That's why we have this program. I'm so glad you said that. Gosh.
Another prompt.
And I didn't even do it on purpose. Flax, you might have had flax seed in your morning bread or on your cereal. You might take flaxseed oil as a supplement. So right there, it's culinary and it's medicinal in that regard, but it's a linen. I'm not wearing linen today, but the last time I gave this talk, I was wearing linen. Mm-hmm. And linen comes from the flax plant. And
well, I guess that could be the crafting then.
Exactly where I'm going with that.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
It's a trifecta.
So that's a trifecta.
It's a trifecta.
And it is a pretty plant too. The flowers are quite lovely.
They are. Yep. No, they really are.
They are. I know. Yeah. I've grown it in large quantities and it's quite pretty.
I don't.
Then I'll go out and eat the seeds. I'll take the little seeds and crush them in my hands, blow away all the seed, the husk and chow down on a bunch of seeds.
I don't think I've ever done that. So I guess I'm missing that.
You don't eat too close to the ground, Ken. I know that.
Well, you can work that into your upcoming schedule.
I can work on that.
I'm sure I was looking at the seed packets before I came here to talk with you guys. Mm-hmm. And I think I saw flax on the seeds.
I'll have to take a look for that when I go down there.
Grab a packet before you go.
Okay. And you select these several years out.
Yes. We publish a book each year on a monograph on the herb of that year.
Wow.
And I'm a contributor to the books.
Wow, so that whole book is on chamomile?
Yes.
Wow.
This
wow.
whole book just, is on rosemary.
Holy moly.
Rosemary. No, rose. Roses.
Wow.
And this booklet, we grew from booklets to books. This whole booklet is scented on geranium. Scented geranium.
I love scented geranium.
Yes.
They do not get enough press.
Oh, yeah. They do for me. I have a cookbook of them.
Oh, wow. Called
Scented Geranium Yums.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a booklet. It's not nothing. It's a PDF. Neat. People could email me if they wanted it.
Wow.
Find me somewhere.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We've been talking with Karen England from the San Diego Horticultural Society and also an herbologist here in San Diego. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements and our special guest, Karen England from the San Diego Horticultural Society. She's also a local expert on herbs. She is an herbologist and not an herbalist, as she had explained to us in the previous segment. So, Karen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
You had mentioned an email. Do you want to give out an email address where people can contact you if they have questions?
It's super easy. It's k-england@cox.net.
That should be relatively easy to
I'll make remember. Sure we get that on our Facebook page when we'll promote this particular show.
Okay. We will make sure that gets out there. So if any of you out there have any questions about herbs, I would defer you to Karen. Because she's probably forgotten more about them than I have ever known. So.
Well, she at least knew flax was in the herbs. So,
well, yeah. I'm so dumb. The only flax that I'm really familiar with is New Zealand flax, which is not the same.
No,
not at all. Nice plant, but
very,
but not an herb. During the break, I had mentioned I had seen a interesting video on YouTube, which is just about all I ever watch anymore. It was about 15 medieval herbs, and thought we might go over some of these and see what your thoughts are on them. One of them that jumped out right off the top was wormwood, which is Artemisia. We've sold Artemisia as long as I can remember.
Like tarragon? Tarragon?
No,
tarragon and Artemisia.
Yeah,
I guess it is. It is. Not the one that I'm thinking of.
Wormwood is not.
Oh, I know. Artemisia, but they're related.
Yeah,
and it was most notably known. It was medicinal, but it was also used in alcoholic beverages. Absinthe being the main one, and that was banned in the United States for a number of years.
Makes people crazy.
Up until recently, that ban was lifted. Fairly recent.
I was going to say it's within the last 10 years.
I think it's within the last 5.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. But I have tried it myself and it's one of those interesting liquors that when you add water to it, it changes color.
Right.
And it does have kind of a green.
It goes with its other properties that when you imbibe it, it makes you see things green.
Yeah. It looks like ethylene glycol. I mean, it kind of looks like antifreeze,
which
don't want to drink.
Which is another one that you don't want to drink.
I don't grow wormwood, that Artemisia, but I grow Sweet Annie, which is Artemisia annual.
Oh, okay.
And I have been for 24 years. And I say that because I only planted it once. 24 years ago. That's how I know returns. I've been growing it that long. But it's Sweet Annie is an Artemisia that's used in Asia medicinally. And we don't really use it that way here. But in my chapter of the latest Herb of the Year book by the International Herb Association, I have a recipe for homemade vermouth.
Oh.
Because chamomile and Artemisia annua are both ingredients of the 30 herbs or so that are in my recipe. Maybe not 30. Let's say 18.
A number.
A lot. But anyway, Artemisia annua is how I use the plant mostly at my house. And yeah, there's bay. I'm growing bay.
Mm-hmm.
This might be on your list.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it is not, but that's
a, oh, it that was a medieval be. Herb, definitely. Mm-hmm. So I've got lavender, chamomile, star anise. I'm not growing that. Cardamom, I could, but I'm not growing it. Mm. Cinnamon sticks.
I've grown cardamom, but I could never get it to bloom.
Yeah, mm. that's what I... That's
beautiful why plant, I but I could never... Yeah. It got huge, but I could never get it to flower. And it's one of my favorite spices.
But anyway, you have a little sugar, a little water, and a lot of brandy and sherry and wine, and you steep that with some orange peel and everything. Ooh. And a few days later, you have vermouth. So you don't have to have your Artemisia in absinthe.
Mm. Oh, you know, it's interesting. We were back in New Orleans in February, and there's actually a museum there. It's called the Sazerac House. And they tell you the whole history of the Sazerac cocktail, and they actually have samples. But absinthe is one of the ingredients of a Sazerac cocktail. And it's actually one of my favorite cocktails. It's a very, very old cocktail, but it's also a very interesting one. So wormwood is a very interesting plant.
So does it self-sow? You said you've been growing it for 24 years.
Yeah, it's not where I originally planted it. It has drifted. I have 2 acres sloping, so I'm a mountain goat gardener. But it has drifted from the eastern front of my place across. It's heading west.
Mm. Go west, young man.
Yeah.
All right. Now, do the seeds run downhill? I always discovered at the Botanic Garden that everything down toward Quail Gardens Drive would be where all the volunteers of everything would sprout, because all the seeds tended to run downhill. So
yeah, it's kind of going down. My property is this way, but my street is going this way, and it's going down the street, but not down the property.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Did everyone see that out there in Radioland? Yes. Hands. All right.
Now, all of the herbs that are out there, and there's so many, I mean, hundreds.
Billions
even. What would be your number one
good question
herb?
Oh,
if you could only pick one.
You guys are the best. Thank you so much for asking that. It's Cleveland sage.
Really?
Salvia clevelandi.
Wow.
Native to our Cleveland National Forest. And I call it the herb that saved Thanksgiving. So my favorite day of the year is Thanksgiving Day. My favorite meal of the year is Thanksgiving dinner. My favorite food of all time is stuffing.
Mm-hmm.
And sage is a crucial part of that. And I couldn't grow it in the 80s in Encinitas in Cardiff, where I lived. Salvia officinalis or vulgaris, whichever you want to call it. Common sage, I couldn't grow. It got a yucky fungal wilt. And I was serially planting it and sowing it and everything just to have something survive until Thanksgiving Day. And I was bemoaning this fact quite at length to a customer at Sunshine Gardens that happened to be a cookbook author, just randomly. And we were talking about Thanksgiving coming up, and I told her this story, and she looked at me like she almost put her hands on my shoulders and said, "Karen, what are you doing? Why aren't you just using our native sage?" Hmm. And my mind exploded. I didn't know it was edible.
I didn't either.
I didn't either.
Nor did I.
It smells so good though when you brush
so
against it.
Yeah, good. Oh. It's so good. The flowers are edible, just like
Physialis.
Yeah. So it changed my life. It certainly changed Thanksgiving. The very first one that I grew, I was living in a rental at the time. So I put it in a pot, named him Grover, and he moved with me. Now I have dozens and dozens of baby Grovers everywhere, but it's my favorite.
Wow.
It is. I would say out of all the salvias, it's probably, it may be my favorite as well. And I remember being in the mountains where it grows wild, and especially after a rain, mm-hmm. you can You can just smell it in the air. Just that the impact of the rain brings out that fragrance, and it's just a mesmerizing fragrance. A lovely plant. It's one of the great natives of the area for sure.
Going inland from Encinitas and Cardiff, where I was living, to Vista, I now have cracked the Salvia officinalis code, and I can grow it and use it and everything. But I still prefer Cleveland sage, and use it all the time, and love to serve people something that I've made with it, either a bread or something, so that they can experience that next step, which so many of the people that I know are growing it and not utilizing it in this way.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It's probably pushing 30 years ago now. There was an interesting salvia that I grew, and I can't remember the botanical name for it right now, but it was clary sage.
Oh yeah,
I've grown that. And it was huge.
Yeah, it's long, beautiful flower stalks. Yeah. It makes a big clump
and tons of resin. It's super sticky. Yeah. But as I recall, the hummingbirds loved it.
Oh yeah.
It was the biggest sage I think I've ever seen.
It's definitely medicinal. It's been used through the centuries. It could be on your medieval list, but used for this as for eyes. It's known for its herbal effect on eye ailments and eye problems. And it still can be used to this day. They make tinctures of it, and they treat eyes with poultices. The herbalist,
yeah. The people that apparently know what they're doing when it comes to medicine and herbs.
They use clary sage.
Very interesting. And, you know, there's a new salvia or a new sage. Rosemary was moved from... Yeah. Rosemary status.
Okay, don't get me started.
Yeah, did you have anything to do with that?
They didn't ask me because I would have told them not to do it.
I agree.
I don't know who died and made the Royal Horticultural Society Guy King. Oh, yeah, I do know who died. But it's not in the best interest of herbalism. Now I can talk about herbalism, even though I'm not an herbologist. Anytime a plant has officinalis in its second, in the botanical name, calendula officinalis, Ross Marinus officinalis, any of that kind of thing, that officinalis is a moniker that it was safe as medicine. Mm-hmm. And it was how we got our medicinal herbalist to this day. It was this safety feature and this protection for the plants. And to remove that, since there is Salvia officinalis, they made it Salvia Ross Marinus or whatever, but they removed what I think is an extremely important historical and personal part of the name. And
makes it official.
Officinalis.
Officinalis, or officinal. Yeah. Either one, we're losing so much of this. And I don't think that the Royal Horticultural Society should have done that. And I've drafted a letter, and it was returned. Oh. No, I'm teasing.
Unanswered.
They don't care.
Karen, we need to take a quick break, but we will have you back, and this will be a discussion for another time. I know we have you pushing against a class that you have to get to. So thank you so much for coming in. We've been talking to Karen England from the San Diego Horticultural Society and local herbologist here in San Diego. If you have any questions, you can email her at k-england@cox.net.
Yep.
And thanks again for coming in. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. Didn't figure out how to get the clock started there, but now we're good to go. Thank you very much to Karen England from the San Diego Hort Society for coming in, talking to us about the Horticultural Society here in San Diego, and also her profession as an herbologist. I've got to make sure I get that correct, straight, because right. It's not, she is not an herbalist. An herbalist is somebody who uses herbs in
medicinally.
Right. So, which I can see where there would be a lot of study would have to go into that, because you definitely wouldn't want to use them improperly. put it that way. So one of the things that we were talking about that we touched on very briefly, we did not have a chance to go into it in greater detail, but we will have her back and we can go over it even more, was 15 medieval herbs. And there was a very interesting YouTube presentation that I watched on it. I sent the link to George. He will post that on the Walter Anderson Nursery main page so you can check it out as well. But some of the ones that they had talked about, one of the ones that we talked about briefly with Karen was wormwood, Artemisia species. Neat looking plant. Silver, kind of ferny foliage to it. It's been around for a long, long time. So that's something that you...
Artemisia genus. You said species.
Artemisia right. genus, right. Excuse me. So there's a few different ones available.
And as I alluded to earlier, one of them is tarragon. It is an Artemisia. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which that was news to me.
That's why I like throwing it out, because people don't know that. It's like, oh, really? It is? Are you sure?
Oh, I thought you just like making me look stupid.
No. I sit here in the stupid chair all the time. So.
One of the other ones that I had heard about, but I had never, I've never seen it. I actually don't know if it grows in this area, is whorehound. Hmm. Marubium vulgare.
Yeah.
And they used it in medieval times. They used it as to cure respiratory ailments. They would make cough drops out of mm-hmm. it. They could actually boil it down and create a hard, chewy, almost like candy out of it. And they would use it for respiratory ailments. Now, there again, this we're just talking about these informationally. We are not suggesting
or advocating anything.
Not advocating right? anything. And please do not go out and try anything just because it sounds good or sounds like it sounds fun. We are not asking you to do that at all. So this is just purely an informational basis.
The whorehound is a mint family plant.
Mm-hmm. Is it really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would make like it. Yeah. That would kind of, it does kind of look like mint.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it. Yeah.
They used to sell it all the time at places like Knott's Berry Farm, where they would have candies made from it, like little candy canes.
Oh, really?
Canes. Yeah,
oh.
Out of whorehound. Yeah.
Hmm. I wonder if they have that up at Bates Nut Farm.
Oh, maybe.
If I ever go there again, I'll have to take a look inside the candy store. Let's see. We talked about wormwood. Lovage, which is one we've had that.
Not oh, yeah, too, we do carry
we,
that. Yeah.
We do carry that. Yep. Versatile herb can be used in a variety of dishes, primarily as a substitute for celery or parsley, which I thought was interesting. Can be used in soup, salad, stocks, and other savory dishes. Can be used fresh or dried. Stems and roots can be incorporated incorporated into cooking. In the Netherlands, lovage leaves are traditionally cooked with white asparagus and salt and served with boiled eggs.
That sounds good.
Oh, I don't know.
I love white asparagus.
I'm not sure about that one. I don't mind asparagus. It's the combination that is kind of getting me on that one. In Romania, the leaves are preferred for seasoning, for various broths, and just as popular as parsley or dill. Kind of interesting there. And in the UK, an alcoholic lovage cordial is traditionally added to brandy as a winter drink, which I'll have to look that one.
A cordial.
Look up lovage cordial.
But look at the rest of that on what it was used for in that, what you were just reading.
Yeah.
It's added to slightly spoiled smuggled brandy to hide the taste of salt.
Or that smuggled brandy that you might have left over at Christmas time.
Yeah.
You know, when you're rowing ashore with your smuggled brandy, it's always a hazard.
One that I had not heard of before, Costmary. Have either of you heard of that particular one before?
I looked that up when you sent the video, and it almost looks like one of the salvia, the native salvias, as far as the leaves.
Yeah, it says it seems to have originated in the Mediterranean, where a plant was called Balsamita.
Oh, interesting.
But wow. Described by Columella in 70 AD is the same as unclear. Costamare was widely grown since the medieval times in herb gardens until the late 19th and early 20th century. In the 21st century, it has mostly disappeared in Europe, but still widely used in Southwest Asia. It's referred it's considered, to as a balsam herb, which is interesting. It's in the aster family.
Yeah, it says it was delightfully fragrant. Hmm. It smells and tastes like spearmint with a hint of eucalyptus.
Hmm. Did have some medicinal properties to it. It was also used in making potpourri and was tied in bundles with lavender to add fragrance to bedding. I guess that was before the washing machine was invented.
So, maybe it helped keep the bed bugs under control.
Well, you know, speaking of bugs and bug control, the next one that's on the list is tansy. And I'm pretty sure we've had tansy in stock.
Yeah, I've seen it
in the past. It's a tanacetum. So I'm sure we've had tanacetum in stock. Perennial herbaceous plant with a history of both medicinal and culinary use. So it's now often recognized as a noxious weed due to its invasive nature and toxicity. Features distinctive button-like yellow flowers and aromatic fern-like leaves. While historically used for various purposes, including flavoring, modern understanding emphasizes its potential toxicity, hence why we don't recommend people try these things.
It's high in thujone, which is also the active ingredient in the wormwood.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And it says tansy is poisonous to humans and livestock, though it is seldom grazed due to the strong odor. And that was one of the things that they had mentioned as a staunch garden protector, and people would plant it to repel ants, flies, fleas, moths, mosquitoes, ticks, and even mice. Now, the mice thing is interesting because you had seen somewhere that
we've had customers say that mint and plants would keep, or bay leaves, et cetera, would keep mice away. And,
but you had read somewhere that the olfactory or scent based repellents for mice and rodents typically don't work that well.
I think it was UCIPM that said that. Yeah.
I think you're right.
Well, again, I had a plum tree at my old house with a big mint patch underneath it that was in the ground as part of it. It was a big cement area so the mint wouldn't run past. But anyway, mint, rats and mice going up getting plums with the mint right there. So the mint was not a deterrent in any way, shape, or form.
Did not bother them.
I have property in Julian, and everybody up there is always talking about rats chewing the wiring under the hood of their car or on their RVs. And they always talk about putting peppermint oil. So, but to your point, maybe that does not.
Perhaps the oil is more concentrated and maybe, but.
With the oil, that would be they might be able to get past the fragrance, but they may not be able to get past the taste or the sensation if they chew on it.
I just know that it didn't work as a deterrent when they could walk right through it to get to the tree.
I've had people tell me to plant rosemary to keep rattlesnakes away too, but
rattlesnake I dealt with came right through the rosemary.
Right. Yeah, I was thinking, seriously. I've seen them in the rosemary. So.
Came right across the garden from rosemary plants.
Mm. Yeah. Another one that I don't know how many I've pulled out of my lawn before is plantains. Not the banana type plantain, but the weed plantain. And the one that's primarily known as broadleaf or plantago major, common perennial weed found in lawns, gardens, and disturbed areas worldwide, or disturbed areas. I'm not sure what that means.
That means places that have been broken, if there's been construction or something. Yeah.
Characterized by basal rosette of broad oval leaf leaves with prominent veins. Slender leafless flower stalks, often considered a nuisance, has a history of medicinal use and culinary uses too, which I never would have occurred to me. Grown everywhere from parking lots to playgrounds, is often dismissed as a pest. Is not only edible and readily available, but has also been used in centuries for traditional medicine. Contains plant compounds that may reduce inflammation, improve digestion, and promote wound healing. So those are interesting aspects of it. Like I said, considering how many I've pulled out of my yard. Another one that's pretty common that we still sell from time to time. Borage. which is pretty well known.
It's a beautiful plant.
Yeah, too. Vibrant blue star-shaped flower on it.
And bees love it. When it is in full bloom, it is a bee magnet.
Cucumber-flavored leaves.
Yep.
Which I thought was very interesting.
You've not tasted it?
I've never tasted it. Yeah, and it even mentions here its ability to attract bees and other beneficial insects. It is good companion planting. Leaves and flowers are edible, offering a refreshing cucumber-like taste. Can be used in salads, drinks, and even candied.
It does self-sow readily, and you know, once you grow it in your garden, if you keep that place with a little, that area with a little water, you will have it for the rest of your life.
That's interesting. Another one that I know that I've spotted. We'll get to this one real quick. Valerian, flowering plant whose root is used as an herbal supplement, particularly for its potential as a sedative and sleep-promoting effects. It's been used for centuries for traditional medicine for various ailments, including digestive and urinary problems, more recently for insomnia and anxiety. And I know, now that I think about it, one of the things that I used to do or still do from time to time, if I'm in like Sprouts Market or places like that that have a lot of natural foods, you go through the herb section and see what they have. And there's a lot of very interesting things there. And I have seen valerian there, valerian extract. And that's one of the things that they mentioned in the TV spot is that it was used as a sleep aid. So if you have trouble with melatonin, you might try to find some valerian extract somewhere to
use. We've had customers come in specifically asking for it for that reason.
That's interesting. I know I've seen it. I've seen it on the shelves, but I've seen it in the store, but it's been a while, but I haven't actually gone out and looked for it. So there's a lot of other things on this list as well. And George will post the link to the YouTube site on the Walter Anderson Facebook page. Once again, thank you very much to Karen England from the San Diego Hort Society for coming in. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with John Clements and George Allman. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.